I think what you're seeing is just the start of a reassessment. That is still a question in people's mind, whether this is a bluff and whether anything will be really different come Friday.
Trade negotiations churn amid new Trump tariff threats. It's Tuesday, May 7th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the Arctic heats up with global competition. Turbulent Aussie politics boil over, thwarting active shooters, a heavenly stop at Hell's Canyon, and the gravity of a stellar collision. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China's foreign ministry says Chinese negotiators are preparing to travel to the United States for their next round of trade talks after U.S. President Donald Trump complained the process was taking too long and threatened higher tariffs on billions of dollars of Chinese goods. Foreign Ministry spokesman Gong Shuang told reporters Monday that China was trying to get more information about Trump's comments about the new tariffs. Vice Premier Liu He, China's top trade negotiator, is expected to be among those preparing to make the trip to Washington this week. Trump wrote on Sunday on Twitter, "The trade deal with China continues, but too slowly as they attempt to renegotiate. No." He followed that Monday with more complaints about trade imbalances, tweeting, "The United States has been losing for many years, $600 to $800 billion a year on trade. With China, we lose $500 billion. Sorry, we're not going to be doing that anymore." Trump said he'll raise the existing 10% tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods to 25% and impose new tariffs on another $325 billion of other products. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke via Skype with Phil Levy, a senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. From 2003 to 2006, he served first as senior economist for trade for President Bush's Council of Economic Advisers and then as a member of Secretary of State Rice's policy planning staff covering international economic matters. Melman asked if President Donald Trump's threat to raise tariffs was a bluff.
That's the $200 billion question. It's a threat that he's made before, and he was bluffing. So we've had a deadline that looked very much like this deadline that was for January 1st, one for March 1st, and both of those went by the wayside. This one has a much shorter lead time, and we'll see if he means it.
Why would he mean it? Why, if he has said over the past month or so that the talks were going along very well and everything we had heard coming from the talks seemed to amplify that, why would he bluff?
President Trump has declared that his negotiations go well almost no matter what's happening. He'll declare that a very minor agreement is a fabulous agreement. The statement that things were going great plays well at elections. It plays well with markets. When you want to give the impression that you're making great progress and you are a master negotiator, he's been setting himself up for trouble on this China deal because they were never headed towards the kind of big, broad, comprehensive deal that he promised. It wasn't going to happen, and that was setting him up for a choice between either having a much more minor deal where each side declared success or having a breakdown. It seems like the prompt for Sunday's tweets from the president was a statement by the Chinese that they were not going to actually write new laws on some of the issues that the U.S. had been concerned about.
The U.S. markets are down. The China markets have been having their problems, as has the Chinese economy. Where does a bluff like this leave the financial world?
It leaves it in a bit of a quandary, and it leaves it in a state where it has to do some very quick reassessments. The financial world had been notably optimistic about these talks. They believed the president's happy talk. The president had been promising that this problem was about to be fixed. I think what you're seeing is just the start of a reassessment. That there's still a question in people's mind whether this is a bluff and whether anything will be really different come Friday. But if they decide that it is, there's going to be some very rapid reassessments, both in financial markets and when you get to companies who are deciding where they're going to make purchases and where they're going to ship.
And what about the Chinese economy? Where does it leave that?
The Chinese economy has had more than its share of troubles, although it's worth noting that a troubled Chinese economy is one that grows at a little faster than 6%, whereas the U.S. economy grows at 3%. It's also worth noting that a lot of the troubles they've had stem from things beyond U.S. trade problems. So they've got issues with debt, for example. They would clearly like to reach a solution, and it is also clear that if we have a breakdown, this will be damaging to the Chinese economy. That said, it's not clear that President Trump has offered them a viable alternative to having a breakdown like that.
What do you think needs to be done? What deep kind of movement does either or both sides have to do to reach some kind of agreement?
It's going to be very hard to get something that's satisfactory by the end of this week. The Trump administration was way too scattered in its approach, way too far-reaching in its requests. There are important solutions that we could reach with the Chinese, but it's not something you do between Monday and Friday. At the moment, I think what the ideal that would happen is they would make what progress they can, accept that result, and then figure that there's more work to be done.
What does this whole threat for increased tariffs by the end of the week do to U.S. relationships with Euro markets, with other markets around the world?
I think it makes us look even more predictable than we've appeared to be under this president. It also has the potential to further undermine U.S. credibility. One of the real tools that a White House has to shape events and policy and other actors' roles in the world scene is you can make pronouncements and people believe you. This is literally the third time President Trump has announced a deadline for raising these tariffs from 10 to 25%. He didn't mean it on the first two. If he pulls back again, it's hard to see why anybody would believe him.
The two governments have raised tariffs on hundreds of billions of dollars of goods in their dispute, which centers on the administration's complaints about China's efforts to achieve supremacy in global technology through illicit means. The confrontation has disrupted trade in goods ranging from soybeans to medical equipment. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China prepares for trade talks despite Trump's new threat. Thailand crowns new king for new era. How Vietnam and the Philippines will get around China's fishing ban in disputed sea. With missile test, North Korea sends message to Seoul. Brunei says death penalty moratorium to cover Sharia laws. Expanded coverage of all these stories and a whole lot more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United States will be increasing its military presence in the polar region. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made that announcement Monday after arriving in Finland for a meeting of the Arctic Council. Pompeo said, quote, "We are hosting military exercises, strengthening our force presence, rebuilding our icebreaker fleet, expanding Coast Guard funding, and creating a new senior military post for Arctic affairs inside our own military." The region has become an area of global power and competition, said the Secretary of State. In Beijing, Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesperson Geng Shuang pushed back, saying China has been adhering to the path of peaceful development and asked the United States to abandon the outlawed concept of Cold War mentality and the zero-sum game. With the steady reductions in sea ice in the polar region, new naval passageways and trade opportunities are seen to be opening up. Last month, Russia announced plans to connect the Northern Sea Route with China's maritime Silk Road, a move seen as developing a new shipping channel from Asia to Northern Europe. Meanwhile, China's interest in the Arctic has been on the rise in recent years. Its Arctic policy states that China hopes to work with all parties to build a polar Silk Road through developing the Arctic shipping routes. Pompeo on Monday rejected interference by non-Arctic countries in the polar region.
Beijing claims to be a near-Arctic state, yet the shortest distance between China and the Arctic is 900 miles. There are only Arctic states and non-Arctic states. No third category exists, and claiming otherwise entitles China to exactly nothing. That's not to say Chinese investment is unwelcome. Indeed, quite the opposite. The United States and Arctic nations welcome transparent Chinese investments that reflect economic interest and national security ambitions. Our Pentagon warned just last week that China could use its civilian research presence in the Arctic to strengthen its military presence, including our deployment of submarines, including deployment of submarines to the region as a deterrent against nuclear attack. We need to examine these activities closely, and we keep the experience we have learned of other nations in mind.
Military officials from Russia and China said both countries intended to regularly conduct joint war games following last September's massive Vostok 2018 military exercises that spanned extensive regions of Siberia, Russia's Far East, the Arctic, and Pacific Oceans. China was invited for the first time to join the drill. The Arctic houses 13% of the world's undiscovered oil, 30% of its undiscovered gas, an abundance of resources including uranium, rare earth minerals, and millions of square kilometers of untapped fisheries. Happening now in Asia, Thailand's new king granted royal audiences to foreign diplomats and representatives Monday on the final day of coronation ceremonies. You'll find much more as you go online to VOA 60, and you can stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us today. Anti-Islam, racist, and homophobic rants on social media have forced several candidates from Australia's main political parties to withdraw from the election campaign ahead of the May 18th poll. One disgraced nominee for the centre-right Liberal Party had suggested Muslims wanted to overthrow the Australian government and bring in Sharia law. Another said Muslim immigration into Australia should be banned, as we hear more from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
In this election, several candidates have had to suddenly quit or disavow what they've said on social media in the past. Racist and sexist posts have resurfaced online. Australia's Liberal Prime Minister Scott Morrison has been quick to distance himself from three of his party's nominees.
Those comments are things that I don't share, that I don't accept, and I won't stand for.
Jessica Whelan is one of the Liberal candidates who was forced to quit. She's denied being responsible for a vulgar post that argued women who supported Islam should be mutilated and sold as slaves. But she does admit that she's posted racist comments.
A couple of years ago, I would have made some anti-Islamic posts. I'm not denying that.
Whelan is now running as an independent in the state of Tasmania. And a former Australian MP, Peter Slipper, thinks she may win because of her old social media posts.
A lot of Liberal voters, they would sympathise with that unacceptable sentiment that she has expressed. And I think that a lot of Labor voters would also sympathise with it.
None of the major parties have been immune. The opposition Labor has also dropped candidates because of their offensive jokes about rape, lesbians and Catholics. In the Northern Territory, a Labour nominee, Wayne Kernoth, resigned after it was revealed he'd previously posted an Islamic State-themed photo online and had also shared a bizarre conspiracy theory that claimed the world was controlled by a society of Jewish shape-shifting lizards. Most of these self-destructive posts weren't made recently, but have emerged at a time when they would cause maximum damage. One disgraced candidate said his political downfall was an important lesson for young people that your social media footprint will follow you. And despite being denounced, racism has become a reoccurring theme this election. Candidates with no history of saying or writing racist comments have had their posters desecrated with swastikas and other offensive symbols. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, protecting houses of worship. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA programs. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, popular Australian DJ Adam Neate, who performed under the name Adam Sky, has died at a resort complex on the Indonesian island of Bali. You'll find more when you visit VOA Asia Facebook each day, where you'll also find top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, mass shooting at houses of worship around the world, including one in New Zealand that killed 50 people at a mosque and another one at a Pittsburgh synagogue that claimed 11 lives, continue to reverberate among all religious worshipers. Many are now learning how to take security measures to protect themselves and save the lives of others. VOA's Hilfer Müller has more from Arlington, Virginia, where members of a mosque are being trained on how to respond to an active shooter case.
This is Bethel Mukarram Mosque in Arlington, Virginia. Worshippers have finished their prayer session, but they are staying for a lesson from an Arlington County police officer.
So today we want to talk about how to respond to an active shooter event.
Officers are teaching worshippers what to do if someone opens fire in the mosque.
The purpose of the active shooter training is to prepare the public to have the tools necessary in case an act of violence should take place.
Worshippers say they welcome this kind of training.
It was wonderful. I am very much happy for being here and learning the techniques to escape some of the unexpected shooting situations in public places, especially in the mosque.
I really appreciate the Arlington County police officer that they care about us. They really, really care about us.
This training is based on the best practices of U.S. Department of Homeland Security. It promotes the run, hide, and fight model. It urges people first to run away from a shooter if possible. If not, officials urge people to hide and finally to fight back and do everything humanly possible to survive.
I think it was good because at least it got me thinking and it made me not feel like so helpless, you know, and it's encouraging to have even police officers tell you, like, even just doing a little thing like hiding under a desk with a trash can save your life. That's good news.
Some places, like an office building, you can hide in the bathroom and lock the door.
Mosque leaders say they decided to offer this training after the latest attacks on the mosque and synagogues.
We imams had a meeting in the area. We thought that New Zealand kind of incident can happen anywhere. Therefore, we decided to have this program. For this, we reached out to Islamic Circle of North America for help. They organized this training with the help of local police department.
So the most important thing the police need to know is, where are you? What the location? Okay, so that is the first thing you need to get out.
The training is provided to all religious communities. Officers say they hope the worshippers will be as prepared as possible, but never have to use the lessons they have learned. Nilofer Mughal, VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
This news from VOA Asia, Foxconn Chairman Terry Guo said he told U.S. President Donald Trump that he wanted to be the peacemaker between the United States, China, and self-ruled Taiwan, which Beijing claims as its own. You'll find all the stories that come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, spending a month at an historic ranch as its host and caretaker is not a dream vacation description, but a volunteer program offered by the U.S. Forest Service. The Hells River Volunteering Program allows anyone to spend a month at one of the most picturesque places in the country. The only requirements are filling in an application, stocking up on food, and, perhaps the hardest, being ready to live without a cell phone. Eliseo Bacalets traveled to the Hells Canyon area to speak with volunteers living at the ranch. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Kirkwood Historic Ranch sits on the bank of the scenic Snake River in Idaho's Hells Canyon. The ranch belongs to the U.S. Forest Service, and anyone can volunteer to spend a month at the beautiful house as its host and caretaker.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Charlie and Jane McCrum have lived at the ranch for a few weeks.
We've always wanted to do something like this. We heard that the Forest Service did have opportunities, you know, for ordinary people like us that weren't associated, employed by the Forest Service.
This is your home for a month.
It is.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. How good is it?
Awesome.
Yeah.
We will show you. Like
Okay, so this is where all of our food preparation is done.
This is kitchen.
This is our kitchen.
Uh-huh.
Very basic, but it works well. This is our wood stove, and this is, we've just started using this the last few days because it's been cool enough.
The flip side to this perfect vacation, the McCrums had to stock up on food and bring it with them to the ranch.
But we have found that we don't throw any thing away.
Bedrooms are on the second floor. The McCrums prefer one with mesh screens instead of windows.
This is where we sleep, and it is wonderful in the evening because you get the breeze, and it's almost like being in a treehouse.
There's no cell reception at the ranch, and the only way of communication with the outside world is through a small radio point or a small local post office. McCrums get mail every Wednesday and say they love getting postcards and letters from their family.
On Wednesdays, if we have mail to go, we raise the red flag so the mailboat knows to stop here and pick up mail.
The main responsibilities include greeting tourists, making sure the ranch is clean and the lawn watered. The U.S. Forest Service offers several volunteer programs like this one. All volunteers need to do is get in touch with rangers, fill in an application, and be ready to enjoy the pristine nature that surrounds them. Felicia Bacalets in Hells Canyon, Idaho, NRIs, VOA News.
The gravity of a cosmic collision is pulling at our attention as we hear VOA's Rick Pantaleo take a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
On April 25th, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, or LIGO, along with their European counterpart, Virgo, may have detected gravitational waves they think were produced by the collision and merger of two neutron stars. If confirmed, this would be the second time the gravitational wave observatories were able to spot these ripples in the fabric of space-time from a neutron star merger. The LIGO-Virgo scientists say that a day later, April 26th, the detectors sensed more gravitational waves they think may have been caused by the collision of a neutron star and a black hole. Neutron stars are described as the dense remnants of massive stars that previously exploded. All three LIGO-Virgo detectors resumed operations just a few weeks earlier. The detectors had been shut down so that they could undergo a series of upgrades. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Of course, you'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com, each and every day. You can also hear us on the radio if you happen to be out and about anywhere throughout Asia. Many great radio stations carry our program, like DZUP, 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines, Diliman, in Quezon City. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today. And, of course, we have to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Aiden Utku, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a wonderful day.